depriving the Palestinians from livelihood in this part of the world. He wants to take control of Gaza without its population. Now, this is what he wants. Now, how does he get there? He gets there by lying and by trying to deceive the whole world by saying that he is into the agreement, which has two phases. We finished the first phase. He didn't start the second phase. He wants to delay it. He wants to find any twisted arguments to actually come up with some ideas.
Now, excuses.
Excuses, definitely. And he wants to try to continue the bombing and expand the bombing, especially during Eid.
Yes.
We have this is a holy month of Ramadan. This is a time when people, it's the holiest time in Islam for all Muslims. Children are, trying to celebrate Ramadan, and they're being slaughtered and killed with the clothes of the Eid. This is tragic. I mean, he is targeting ambulances, trying to show more aggression, more violence.
That reflects what you're highlighting, that this is a genocide and a complete genocide, and that's how a genocide looks like. The Israeli commentator in the report, Dr. Amer, believes that the second phase of the agreement remains a sticking point for Netanyahu's administration. Do you think that without the second phase, this agreement will not be moving forward?
Definitely. Well, there was an agreement and they agreed to it, and they are supposed to be guarantees for the agreement, which are the United States and and the Qatar and Egypt, which is, and they're supposed to pressure the Israelis so that we can start phase two in the negotiations. This is what Hamas wants. This is what Hamas announced. Now, the commentator said that, Hamas has been showing like this kind of pacifist approach towards the Egyptian
yes.
initiative. Well, the Hamas has always been positive about anything that comes from the Egyptians, because they hold on to remaining on good terms with the Egyptians, with the Qataris, so that the negotiations can continue in the future. That doesn't mean, however,
but
that Hamas will comply.
But the Israelis are saying, or the cabinet, or Netanyahu's cabinet is always highlighting and saying that the Hamas are the one that are keeping obstacles in the way of this agreement.
Well, that's a complete illusion. In fact, Hamas, from the beginning, even before these negotiations started, Hamas was ready to have a full, comprehensive exchange of all the prisoners of war. From day one. That is in 2023. I mean, like, this is like almost 2 years ago, and Hamas never changed its position. Its position is very clear. It's ready to negotiate and to exchange. However, no one would expect Hamas or anyone else to commit suicide by accepting terms that will lead to its annihilation.
Okay.
That's not possible.
Do we stay in Gaza, where criticism within Israel is escalating against Netanyahu's administration for breaking the ceasefire agreement, as we are highlighting, in both Gaza and Lebanon? A former Knesset member held Netanyahu fully responsible for what she called the return of fighting in Gaza and Lebanon. Dr. Amer, we want to actually understand why all this is happening. A major question is asked. Domestic political calculations, the Israelis in Israel, is this what is banning, or this is what is not allowing Netanyahu to come to a straight decision here and just escalating in all sides?
I think within the Israeli entities population, there are some divisions. The Netanyahu camp believes in violent deterrent techniques. He believes that more blood, more killing, more destruction, will lead to positive results. That he wants to pressure Hamas, pressure the whole world, saying that Israel can kill anyone, can burn, can do a genocide. Nobody's gonna do anything about
this. He still believes that after all what happened?
I think he still believes that. And I think many Israelis still believe that. So what the problem is, and this member of Knesset,
yes,
and this Israeli person,
mm-hmm.
has the other perspective, the perspective that, no, when we do a peace, talks with the adversaries or the enemies of Israel, when we reach an agreement for ceasefire, this ceasefire agreement must be respected.
Okay.
Clearly, the Netanyahu cabinet and the Netanyahu administration is not respecting any agreement. This will make the Israeli entity lose what's left of its credibility in the international community also. And it will show that the Israelis are liars, simply. Mm-hmm. They just want to continue with the bloodshed, with the genocide. They want to continue slaughtering innocent people, innocent civilians, everywhere in southern Lebanon and in Yemen also,
okay.
and in Gaza and the West Bank.
Okay.
And this is ongoing. This is what the Israelis... The Israelis
because
more than ever.
Because they do have a green light from the United States.
Yes, but they're showing more than ever. They're showing the whole world more than ever that they survive based on bloodshed. They survive based on killing other people. No nation or no entity in the world can exist that is founded on the killing of others.
And I think that became obvious to most people. And now, dear viewers, to the plan to displace Gaza's residents, which Netanyahu's administration has put in place and is being heavily promoted in Hebrew media, alongside claims that a large number of Gaza residents want to leave, as we will see.
יש יציאה מעזה בדרכים שונות, גם בנושא הזה וגם בנושא של ההפגנות, יש לי תחינה חרישית שמישהו בישראל סוף סוף יסתום את הפה. פשוט ניתן לדברים להיות, לעשות את שלהם, בלי יותר מדי יחץ ובלי, זה לתת לתהליכים להיות בלי השפעה ישראלית. יש רצון גדול לצאת מעזה, סקר שפורסם בעיתון הבריטי טלגרף, על ידי מכון גלופ, אומר שמחצית מהאוכלוסייה רוצה לצאת, בין אם באופן זמני או קבוע, עכשיו אפשר לנחש שהמספרים האמיתיים יותר גבוהים, אנשים לא כל כך רוצים לשתף פעולה, הם לא יודעים מי בצד השני של הטלפון, או במקרה הזה של הטלפון החכם.
וגם יש דעת קהל עולמית שרואה בזה צעד מאוד בעייתי, ומדברים במונחים של טרנספר.
תלוי באיזה צעד. אם זה הגירת עבודה, לא תראי אף אחד בעולם שיוצא נגד זה. אם מדובר בבעלי דרכונים זרים למשל, סתם לסבר את האוזן, מתוך 1,700,000 עזתים, 200 עד 250,000 הם או בני משפחותיהם בעלי דרכונים זרים. כל האנשים האלה יכולים לצאת בלי שמישהו יצייץ. עכשיו, אני אגיד לך מה ההבדל בין ההשקפה הזאת לבין ההשקפה של טראמפ. טראמפ, לכאורה, עד שלא יוצא הזאתי האחרון, לא יסיק כלום. בעיניי, אם 250,000, 300,000 הזאתים עוזבים, תקראי לזה עבודה, תקראי לזה דרכונים זרים, תקראי לזה ייאוש או טיפול רפואי, זה הישג אדיר, זאת נקבה שנייה מבחינתם, וזה העיתות. אתם רציתם שבערי ונירוז וכפר עזה יעזבו, בסוף ג'בלי ושג'אייה וחניונס הזה.
What is the occupation's goal in promoting the migration of Palestinians from Gaza?
Well, that has been their objective since 1948. I mean, since before 1948. This is a Zionist project, is to push people out of their land. Now, this man is justifying mass crime. He's justifying genocide. He's justifying displacement. He's not recognizing the basic rights to their own land, the basic rights to people for self-determination, which is an international law. Mm-hmm. He's saying that 250,000 of the Palestinians have foreign passports. Is that what he's saying? Mm-hmm. There are 5 million Israelis. They are all Europeans from Ukraine and from Poland and from the United States and from France and from Morocco and Yemen and other countries. And he's saying that out of the inhabitants of Gaza, there are 250,000.
Okay, and you're an expert on criminal justice. What is the legal perspective from this, Dr.
Well, this is an international crime. It's very clear. I mean, Gaza is part of the state of Palestine that is recognized in the United Nations as an entity. These people have the right to self-determination. They have the right to exist as a people. I mean, this is really flagrant.
Do you think that that's obvious now to the world, that the Israelis do not perceive the Palestinians as people that have the rights that you're highlighting?
Well, not just the Israelis.
The legal rights.
Well, not just the Israelis and everyone who supports the Israelis in that sense, and some of the Arabs who support the Israelis as well. I mean, there's no respect for human dignity for these people in Gaza. They just think that slaughtering them and kicking them out of their homes and killing their children on Eid is a right for the Israelis and those who support them. I mean, the problem is not just with the
Israelis. So the resumption of killings and genocide is for that perspective, in your opinion, to push towards migration, your opinion.
Exactly, and that's not just the problem of the Israelis. That's the problem of those who support them. That's the problem of the Arab and Islamic world that is watching this and doing nothing about it.
Israeli social media well engaged with the media campaign to displace Gaza residents. Here are some comments from the Zionist activists.
Dor Hanetzahon. They want to leave, so let them leave. An immigration directorate has been established in Israel. The president of the world's greatest power, Trump, supports us. Norwit Yohanan. The amount of fantasy involved in the idea of migration from Gaza is unbelievable. Egypt has denied twice in half a week that it has agreed to migration or to receiving 2 million people from Gaza in Sinai. Amit Malmad. The only way to stop this vicious cycle is to refuse the return of war to Gaza. We've already tried everything. Reject the killing of captive soldiers and the residents of Gaza.
Dr. Omar, what grabbed your attention in these comments that we just heard together?
Well, these comments, I mean, what grabbed my attention is that they focus on something that they call migration of
yes.
Palestinians from Gaza. It's not about migration. There's a kind of a, really, it's a big lie. This is forced displacement. This is ethnic cleansing. This is
but they said that they agreed that Egypt refuses this migration, some of the writers.
Yeah,
actually.
But even using the term migration is what caught my attention. And of course the Egyptians are going to refuse it in public. I mean, we don't know what's happening.
They will agree under
I'm
the
not
table?
Sure. Well, let's see what they're doing because, you know,
for what
in
benefit?
The past, well, in the past, Egypt has shown a lot of, you know, setback in the negotiation, shown a lot of, you know, a fear that they will lose the American support. They, you know, you have to remember that Egypt has like billions of dollars of debt and they are having really serious economic problems. And their economic problems started to amplify after they signed the peace talks with the Israelis in Camp David, in fact. You know, but this is how the Israelis function, the Americans. They put these countries
under pressure.
Under immense pressure so that they cannot
But they
come.
Declared it to the public, whether the Jordanian or the Egyptians, that they do. They refuse the plan that Trump actually highlighted.
Well, all the Arab leaders declared in public that they support the Palestinian people. I mean, I haven't heard any Arab country saying things that are, you know, that are similar to the actions of supporting the Israelis or just not doing anything about it when they're committing a genocide for more for almost 2 years now. This is a genocide. It's the most dangerous of any crime, and it should be rejected. If it's not rejected, well, there's a collapse of the world order. We are witnessing a collapse in the
but
world
Saudi
order.
But Saudi Arabia is calling for a two-state solution, and that's the mission that they're working upon.
Well, it's not enough. These are just words. We need some action. What two-state solution? I mean, what kind of, we need a viable state, a Palestinian viable state. The solution for Palestine is outlined in Imam Ali Khamenei's book, Qadiyat Palestine, very clearly. I mean, there is, I mean, I invite everyone to read that solution.
Okay.
It could be a logical solution where it could be a baseline to start negotiations if anyone is serious about finding solutions for the Palestinian people.
Okay. Well, total victory, a false term Netanyahu has used dozens of times since the beginning of the war of extermination in Gaza. He continues to use it despite failing to achieve it. A military analyst in Hebrew media examined cases where Netanyahu invoked this term. What is the significance of Hebrew media reminding constantly people of Netanyahu's statements? Absolute victory, total victory.
Well, because the war is ongoing. I mean, the slaughtering is ongoing. What absolute victory? What absolute victory for the Israeli entity when Israel today, creates more threats to the Jewish people all around the world?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Jewish people, you know, wanted to have a state, the state of Israel, so that they can have more security. Now they have less security,
yes.
One. The second thing is that the Palestinian cause wasn't very well known to the whole world before 2023. Today, everybody recognizes the Palestinian flag and the right for the Palestinian people to have their own nation. Palestine is known all over the world more than ever.
And how will these
and
factors
third,
affect the Israelis?
Well, of course it will affect.
Because on their hand, they keep on highlighting, or Netanyahu's keep on highlighting, that we will achieve absolute victory and total victory.
I mean, they're committing the biggest
They're not aware of all the deficiencies?
They're committing the biggest contradiction ever. You see, the Israeli people have been saying that they are the victims of the Holocaust. They're victims
yes.
of the brutality of the
Calling
Europeans.
Calling for anti-Semitism.
And what they're doing now, is they're doing the exact same thing. You know, they're committing all the crimes that they said that they were victims of these crimes. Now, and they're violating all international law. They're committing genocide all over the world. Everyone can see the pictures. Everyone can see the images. All the arguments to justify this genocide are not strong enough. They're not convincing for the whole world, especially when the slaughtering is ongoing, when they see pictures of kids being slaughtered. I mean, they're trying to prove to the whole world that the Jewish people are the chosen people and they are superior to all other people and they have the right to life, whereas the Palestinians, where they have the right to eliminate life and eliminate Palestine, eliminate the right of the Palestinian people to exist.
Yes, massacre them or push for migration, as we were highlighting, the whole world is seeing. And now to the internal divisions and disputes within Israel, which intensified after the dismissal of the Shin Bet chief and the cabinet's legal advisor. The divisions deepened with protests and demonstrations in the streets, which, despite their momentum, are unlikely to push Netanyahu to change his policies. Dr. Amal, do you really think that all these disputes that we're seeing now in Israel, divisions and protests, protests that we have never actually, remarkable ones, never seen in Israel before, will actually affect Netanyahu's decision?
I don't think it will affect him. However, I think they are very important. It's very important to look at the core of the disputes within the Israelis themselves. And that dispute started before the genocide started in Gaza.
Mm-hmm. From the families of the captives?
No, before that.
Okay.
It was a problem over judicial overhaul. And, there was a debate among the Israelis, should we have a state where the law takes precedence or where political interests take precedence? And that is the actual battle. They should realize that the actual Israeli entity cannot exist based on law, cannot exist based on legal premises. This is not a debate. These are criminals. The entity is a criminal entity. They're trying to create a court and a prosecutor and things like that. This debate is at the core of the existence of the entity of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Because this entity cannot exist based on a legal status, you see? So when he removes the chief of the Shin Bet and he decides to replace him with another guy.
And ignore the massive demonstrations and
ignore the massive demonstration, ignore the prosecutor that he calls the prosecutor of the Zionist entity. Try to behave in a way where Netanyahu is trying to tell his people that, Israel can only exist based on bloodshed and genocide. We have to kill other people to exist.
Okay.
We have to slaughter them. We have to violate international law to exist. And it is what he's saying to them. He's saying it is our right as a chosen people, as a Jewish people, as Zionists to do this. And no one can actually object to that.
Okay.
And the other Israelis are having this illusion and telling him, no, we can have, Israel has the right to exist because it is based on some, on the right for the Jewish people to defend themselves, to have a land for themselves after they've been, they suffered from the Nazi Holocaust.
Okay.
That is completely baseless. And I think what Netanyahu is saying looks more like what the identity of this Zionist entity is all about.
Well, Israeli social media was filled with comments on the dismissal of the Shin Bet chief and Ben-Gvir's demand to imprison him. Here are some of those comments.
Ezer Abar, the number one suspect is Ronan Bar, the head of the Shin Bet. He should be prosecuted, not just resign. Moz Vos, the prime minister of corruption is in charge. The prime minister of liars is in charge. The prime minister of cowards is in charge. The people want you gone. You are the primary suspect in what happened on October 7. You blame others and even lie persistently when you accuse the head of the Shin Bet, who achieved remarkable successes, of being a spy. Oren Hellman, does Ben-Gvir really represent who the people of Israel want to control the police? Is this really someone the people of Israel believe should be allowed to attack the head of the Shin Bet? Is this person who has the right to say that the head of the Shin Bet should be put in a prison cell? Do you understand what will happen to our country because of this administration?
What's your opinion on these divided reactions, Dr. Omar, as it's obvious, concerning the dismissal of Ronan Bar?
Yeah, I believe there are these differences and these divisions within the Israeli entity's population. However, I think these are not very serious divisions. The Israelis, they all agree, I think, deep inside, that they need to get rid of the Palestinians. What does getting rid of the Palestinians mean? It means genocide, extermination.
The majority, Dr. Omar?
All of them. I would say you cannot live in an entity that that encourages and performs a genocide. You cannot do that. If you remain there, even if you express yourself like the way they're having these divisions, these are just disagreements, general disagreements. There haven't been any serious clashes within the Israeli community itself. We're waiting for that, though.
Dr. Omar Nashabi, political analyst, thank you for joining us. It's always nice having you on our show.
Thank you.
Time is up. Thank you.
بالمثير az ulum sharifi islami.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant factor.
Imamat yek asl zinda ast dar tarikh Islam.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of Arab English Radio. Welcome to another episode of the program, Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Donishman. Please stay tuned.
حضرت صادق فرمودن اگر میخواین به زیارت ما نائل بشید زیارت هم دیگه برید.
امام صادق علیه السلام in a beautiful hadith states, if you as our follower are interested in visiting us, try your best to pay visit to your brothers and sisters in faith. This hadith emphasizes on salatul rahim. Salatul rahim is so important that it is compared to visiting an infallible imam, even Imam al-Mahdi Jalallah. Therefore, cutting ties with our relatives or brothers and sisters in faith, especially those who are in need, is a sin, and it is as if you reject the invitation of your infallible Imam.
چرا اینقدر از هم دیگه دور شدیم؟ چرا همش مشت تو سینه هم دیگه میزنیم؟
At our mother time, a major question is, why are we day by day more far from each other? Why don't we take care of the needs of others? We must cleanse our souls and we must purify it. We must get free from the grudges of our hearts about others. We must forgive others' mistakes. We must be kind to each other, and we must never cut ties with our brothers and sisters or our relatives and family members for small mistakes that they might make. Also, we must first consider ourselves prone to mistakes and sins. As a result, Silatul Rahim is a much recommended action in Islam, which equals seeing our infallible imams. Thank you very much, dear listeners of Arab English Radio, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Donishman. To find more about this program and our other programs, please visit our new website at iranradio.ir. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
The limelight.
Tough talk and threats aside, the Zionist regime finds itself in a more vulnerable position than at any point in its history. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, "It is clear that Israel is now using the Arabs to mask its own vulnerabilities. And though the monkey continues to climb, his tail has never been as exposed as it is today. The higher the monkey climbs, the more he shows his tail," warns a timeless Chinese proverb. The Zionist regime Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, however, seems to neither heed the lessons of history nor the wisdom of such folk sayings. While leading a vilification campaign against Egypt, the Zionist regime leader is further exposing his regime's vulnerabilities. This is yet another example of Israel's inability to alter the political reality in Gaza, 17 months after it launched its devastating war on the Gaza Strip. By targeting Egypt, the Zionist regime aims to project an image of prowess and that it is unafraid to confront the most populous Arab nation. Yet, in doing so, it inadvertently exposes its own weaknesses. This behavior is wholly consistent with Netanyahu's legacy of running away forward. Long before October 7, 2023, war, Netanyahu was riding a wave of political euphoria. At the time, his relentless climb to greater heights seemed justified. His global South diplomacy was reversing decades of Israeli isolation, and his success in gaining international recognition without paying a significant political price earned him immense popularity at home. In Israel, Netanyahu kept winning one election after another. His latest right-wing extremist coalition secured a comfortable majority in the Knesset, facing little pushback. The extremists were poised to transform Israel from within, reconfigure the region, and, with the usual unconditional support from the United States, position the Israeli regime as a global power commanding respect and authority. However, October 7 and the Zionist regime's catastrophic failure on all fronts exposed Netanyahu's tail as a failed leader. The crisis quickly manifested in global outrage as Israel carried out a genocidal war on the Palestinians, killing and wounding over 160,000 people in the course of 15 months. The Zionist regime's tail was further exposed as the once confident leader who tirelessly promised to reshape the West Asia region to fit Israel's agenda, became a wanted criminal by the International Criminal Court on November 21st. While his regime faced investigations for the crime of genocide by the International Court of Justice. Yet Netanyahu climbed even higher, doubling down on his approach. He insisted on continuing the war in Gaza, maintaining a military presence in Lebanon, and carrying out frequent and massive bombing campaigns in Syria. Bravado aside, Netanyahu has still failed to achieve any of Israel's stated objectives through the devastating war on Gaza, a war that has also cost Israel unprecedented losses and casualties. Meanwhile, the divisions among the political and military elites are deepening. The latest manifestation of this is the firing of many top military brass and the reordering of the army to align with Netanyahu's political ambitions. The more Israel's vulnerabilities are exposed, the more Netanyahu and his allies intensify their threats, not only against Gaza, Lebanon, and Syria, but also against Egypt. In fact, Egypt, which is not a party to the war and has been one of the three mediators in ceasefire talks, has become the primary target of the Zionist regime's new strategy aimed at ethnically cleansing Gaza's population into the Sinai Desert. But how did this come about? Egypt was hardly a factor in the Israeli regime war on Gaza. Yet, as the war on Gaza dragged on, with no possibility of a total victory, top Israeli regime officials began pointing fingers at Egypt. The idea of taking over the Philadelphia corridor, separating the city of Rafah in southern Gaza from the Egyptian border, was first floated by extremist finance minister Bezalel Smotrich. Others, including Netanyahu himself, soon began parroting the same words. In the media, the language took an even more foreboding turn, with some accusing Egypt of arming the resistance movement Hamas, or of not doing enough to stop the flow of weapons to the Palestinian resistance. When Egypt rejected Israeli regime accusations and refused to accommodate Israel's wish to ethnically cleanse Gaza, Israeli regime leaders began talking of an Egyptian military threat, alleging that Egypt was amassing troops at its border with Israel. The original aim of roping Egypt into Israel's failed war was meant to create a distraction from the battlefield. Eventually, however, the distraction turned into deflection, blaming Egypt for Israel's inability to win the war or to displace the Gaza population. To some extent, Netanyahu has succeeded in making Egypt part of the conversation on Gaza, with U.S. President Donald Trump repeatedly proposing the displacement of Palestinians and the takeover of Gaza. The Zionist regime leader felt that finally he had a clear American commitment to export Israel's problems elsewhere. Even the leader of the Israeli opposition, Yair Lapid, used Egypt to distract from his own failure to mount a serious challenge to Netanyahu's rule. On February 25th, he proposed that Cairo oversee the strip for a number of years at a conference in Washington. While Palestinians, Arabs, and others reacted angrily to the Israel-U.S. ethnic cleansing schemes, few paid attention to the fact that, historically, Israel has never sought permission to ethnically cleanse Palestinians. This was as true during the 1948 Nakba as it is today. Putting pressure on Arab countries to concede to the Zionist regime's ethnic cleansing plans is the strongest sign yet of Israel's weakness. Tough talk and threats aside, the child killer regime of Israel finds itself in a more vulnerable position than at any point in its history. It is clear that the Zionist regime is now using the Arabs to mask its own vulnerabilities. And though the monkey continues to climb, his tail has never been as exposed as it is today.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way? All covered up in a world that gives it all away. Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javidar, guest speaker. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh, and welcome to the studio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Well, let's talk about some of the jurisprudential rules of miscellaneous nature based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. And let me begin this episode with this question, Sheikh. You know, somebody asked, I am a computer programmer and various orders or projects are offered to me. Can I pass them on to somebody else actually to do it and take part, you know, a part of the price or a portion of, for example, the wage that is offered to me for myself as the person who introduced the work?
Well, it depends on the contract maybe signed by the two parties.
Yes.
If it is stipulated or it is understood from the context that, for example, you have to do the work yourself, it is not permissible to relegate the task to someone else or to let someone else do it, because that person might actually not agree to what you might be willing to do. Of course, everybody might be willing to give the task to someone else to do it, but in order for him to be able to earn some money, an extra amount of money. But maybe if the quality of the task done by the other party or by the third party is not as good as the task done by the person himself, then in such a case, the person who entrusted his task to you may not be consenting to it. Therefore, you can only entrust it to someone else for a greater or maybe equal price if that individual is consenting to it, if he is willing, if he is happy with it. And yet, if you do something of the work, then you can entrust it to someone else for a lower price. It all depends on the agreement initially.
Yes.
On the initial agreement, in fact.
If it has been stipulated, for example, in the contract, right?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, thank you. Well, a person wants to take money from others to invest in his work in, let's say, advertising or service industry and give him some profit. Which Sharia transaction or legal transaction, in fact, serves this purpose?
Well, he can conclude a contract to be their attorney in such a way that the owners of the capital give him power of attorney to carry out the economic activity with their money, to give them a certain amount according to the agreement of the obtained profit monthly or at the end of the contract, and to take the rest for himself as fee for doing the job. So I use the term attorney, but of course there are some scholars, some translators who have used the term agent. It doesn't make any difference. So the agent can do as agreed, as for example, those who has vested him with the authority or given him the authority to carry out the transaction. So as an agent, he can take out his fees and give the rest as stipulated in the contract to the to those who earn the investment or the capital.
I see. Okay, thank you very much. Let's take a short break and then we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws, on iranradio.ir with me, Mohammad Javad, hosting this program. Stay with us.
The followers of Ayatollah Khamenei can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khamenei's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah, don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Welcome back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. With me, Mohammad Javad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are talking about some of the jurisprudential laws of miscellaneous nature based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Sheikh Javid, in an on-credit transaction, if the buyer, any individual, says that I will pay for example, that service or product when I get the money, is such a transaction correct?
Well, for an on-credit transaction to be valid, it's necessary to specify the time of the payment or the time for the payment. Therefore, the said transaction is not valid because the time for payment is ambiguous. It's not clarified in the transaction or in the contract as to when and what time, what day or what date he's going to repay the amount. So since it is unclear, according to His Eminence, the transaction is invalid. But if the seller consents to the customer's possession of the sold goods, the sold items, despite the fact that the transaction is invalid, mm-hmm. according to His Eminence, there is no problem with the customer using that good or that property that he has taken possession of. Okay, mm-hmm. despite the contract being invalid, because of the fact that the time for the payment is unknown, he can still use the goods that he has taken home.
Mm-hmm. But is the transaction valid because he doesn't pay at the time of buying or purchase?
Yeah, he does in the transaction because if it is pay, if the time is fixed, it is correct, it's valid. Uh-huh. But because the time for payment is not known and it's left, okay, he says, such as, for example, as you rightly mentioned, he says that, okay, I'm going to get that to repay you the money whenever I get the money, mm. okay? It's not known when he's going to get the money.
Exactly.
So that's why His Eminence says that the transaction is invalid, but still he can use the property because the owner is consenting to it. Mm-hmm. As long as the owner of the property consents to his using the property, there is no objection.
So the element of consent is necessary?
Is necessary, yes.
I see. Okay, another question let me ask actually in this portion of the program Islamic Laws. Is it necessary to observe hijab in a mustahab or recommended prayers, such as night prayers? And if it is not observed, is the prayer itself valid?
Well, sometimes we use the term prayer to refer to supplication, dua, mm-hmm. okay, mm-hmm. or reciting the Quran. Of course, there's no problem in reciting the Quran or engaging in a dua, for example, reciting dua kumal, dua tawassul, or any other dua, without any proper hijab, as long as you are in your home, staying alone without any mahram being around, so you can recite those supplications without observing proper hijab. Though observing hijab is highly recommended, even when there is no one and you are engaging in dua and supplications. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to obligatory or mustahab prayer, it does not make any difference as to whether the prayer that you are offering is mustahab or obligatory. For example, you are reciting Salat al-Ghufayla or Namaz Tahajjud, the midnight prayer, and it makes no difference whether it's midnight prayer or it's the Fajr prayer. You have to, as a woman, a woman must observe proper hijab. She should cover her hair and neck and, of course, all parts of her body, except her face and feet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When there is no non-mahram, of course, she does not have to cover her feet. But if there is a non-mahram
but
around,
but this rule doesn't apply to supplication,
feet.
Does it?
No, it's not applicable to supplication.
I see.
Yes.
Only prayers.
Only prayers.
Thank you very much. Let's take a short break and then we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws on IranRadio.ir. Stay with us.
Allahumma salli ala Sayyidina wa Nabiyina Muhammadin wa Ali.
Welcome back to the program Islamic Laws on IranRadio.ir with me, Muhammad Javed, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javed, our guest speaker. We are talking about some of the jurisprudential laws of miscellaneous nature based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khomeini. Sheikh Javed, somebody asked us, my daughter has just reached bulugh or physical maturity, but cannot fast or is not able to fast. What is her legal or Sharia duty?
Well, when we talk about bulugh, or you use the term physical maturity, I don't think it's the right term to use physical, because sometimes a girl might be very, for example, fat and very, big, but she's not attained puberty according to Islamic Sharia, because Islamic Sharia measures puberty according to the year she has lived through. For example, if a girl has completed 9 years of her age, lunar years of her age, then she is considered to be mature and adult according to Islamic Sharia. Maybe she's not physically fit for fasting, for observing fast, or in engaging in any kind of ibadah or acts of worship, which are...
You mean she has reached puberty but not reached maturity?
I think
is this what you mean?
The thing is that we are using the term maturity and puberty interchangeably.
Uh-huh.
And that's very confusing for our audience.
Yes.
We must use one of those words. Sometimes I use the word puberty, sometimes maturity, but maturity has something to do with the mind rather than the body. So puberty, I use the term puberty or adulthood.
Uh-huh.
The Arabic word for adulthood is bulugh, okay?
Right.
So if a girl attains puberty, the Sharia means actually that she has completed 9 lunar years, according to His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Khomeini and many other scholars who consider completion of 9 lunar years as a sign of puberty or a sign of adulthood. So when a girl has completed 9 lunar years, she must start fasting, she must start praying, she must start doing any other religious duties. So as long as she can do it, it's not, for example, harmful to her health, it's not extremely difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So because God, laika lifullah nafsan illa wasa'aha, God does not obligate someone beyond her capacity, beyond their ability. And that could be physical ability, okay? So if fasting is harmful to someone's health, it's not permissible to fast, okay? If fasting is unbearable, unbearable means that it is extremely difficult for us.
Or harmful to her body, for example.
Then it's not permissible to fast.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Javed. Thank you, my dear listeners, for joining us. Your own program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javed, and Sheikh Javed, our guest speaker, and the rest of the crew. We wish you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
لا إله إلا هو الوحيد
us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent. And FM, 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israel's military is pushing ahead with airstrikes on Gaza, killing and wounding more civilians across the besieged Palestinian territory. A newly released video shows Israeli forces firing on clearly identifiable ambulances in an attack that killed 15 Gaza medics and aid workers. And Yemen says U.S. military has carried out new airstrikes against the Arab country, bombing an area near the northern city of Sa'ada. Hello, everyone, and welcome to World News. Our top story, the Israeli military continues to pound the besieged Gaza Strip, leaving more Palestinian civilians dead and injured. At least three people were killed in an Israeli drone strike, which targeted a residential building in Khan Yunis in southern Gaza. Also, in southern Gaza, in Rafah, a Palestinian died of